773, State v. LaBelle, arguing for the petitioner, Audrey Stanley, arguing for the respondent, Stephen Tsushima, argument on merit.
Good morning, counsel. Are you both ready to proceed today? Okay, and Ms. Stanley, I understand you've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll have a light that comes on to let you know when you're getting into that five-minute period, and Mr. Tsushima will give you a five-minute warning before the end of your argument. Very well. Please proceed, Ms. Stanley.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Audrey Stanley, W. Public Defender, appearing on behalf of Petitioner Appellant Donald LaBelle, Jr. Mr. LaBelle's conviction for harassment must be vacated and the case remanded for a new trial. The District Court and the ICA in affirming the District Court gravely erred in prohibiting the Defense Counsel from questioning the prosecution's sole witness, Malia Avila, as to her motive to lie on the stand and give false testimony at trial. The District Court was wrong in determining that the proper line of questioning was not relevant. The District Court violated Mr. LaBelle's constitutional right to confront the witness by precluding this line of questioning. And the District Court abused its discretion in ruling that the evidence was not prejudicial, was unduly prejudicial. Also, the error was not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. HRE Rule 609.1 provides that the credibility of a witness may be attacked by evidence of bias, interest, or motive. In State v. Estrada, this court explained that bias, interest, or motive is always relevant under 609.1. And in State v. Ruapi, the ICA emphasized that the credibility of the prosecuting witness in a criminal case is always relevant. And cross-examination directed towards revealing possible biases, prejudice, or ulterior motives of a witness is a proper and important function of the constitutionally protected right of cross-examination. Under 609.1, a trial court's ruling that the proffered evidence is probative or not probative is reviewed under the right-wrong standard, where an appellate court examines the facts and answers the questions without being required to give any weight to the trial court's answer to it. In this case, the district court ruled that the proper line of questioning was not relevant to the elements of harassment on the date of the incident. That is wrong. The reason why that is wrong is because the defendant, or Ms. Avila, well, the defense counsel wanted to question Ms. Avila about an incident that occurred after the alleged harassment. The allegation was that she stole Mr. LaBelle's credit cards and money after the alleged harassment occurred. This line of questioning.
Ms. Stanley, was the record clear as to what took place, theft or use, with respect to the charged incident?
With respect to the theft?
With respect to the harassment. At the beginning of trial, the public defender said, I want to introduce evidence of a prior incident and subsequent incident. So the question is, was the prior incident the theft of the credit card prior to the harassment, and was the use of the credit card subsequent to the harassment? Because the prosecution seems to take the position that everything occurred after the harassment incident.
The defense counsel sought to question her about a subsequent bad act, which was after the alleged harassment occurred. There was, based on the record, I don't believe there was any allegation that the theft occurred before the alleged harassment. But it really is not relevant at what time this occurred. State v. Marcos is instructive in this regard. State v. Marcos, in that case, defense counsel sought to question the complaining witness about a custody dispute. The incident in that case occurred January 25th. February 4th is when the complaining witness was told about the custody dispute. And February 5th is the day when the complaining witness gave pictures of the alleged abuse to the prosecution. So in that case, the custody dispute arose after the alleged abuse. However, the Supreme Court still said that the defense counsel should be able to question the complaining witness about that motive to seek a conviction against the defendant.
Well, what was the purpose for which defendant sought to use the information here? What was the theory? if you could articulate for us of the cross-examination that was denied.
The theory was to seek to show her motive to lie on the stand, her motive to give false testimony under oath, and the motivation is to seek revenge against Mr. Lavelle for seeking the theft charge, for bringing the theft charges against her. For how she thought, how dare he bring theft charges, initiate a theft case after this incident? How dare he? She wanted him to have a conviction based on, because of the fact that he was pressing charges against her. It's a basic revenge retaliation. It's a prototypical type of motive.
For theft, it was a theft that occurred after the report to the police or before? Now, are there multiple, and perhaps this is where Justice Sokoba was going, are there multiple thefts at issue here?
We weren't allowed to go into, the record does not reflect how many thefts there were. We weren't allowed to question the witness about this.
So I thought the defense theory was that when she went back up to the apartment, that she at that time may have taken cards.
Mm-hmm.
And is that correct?
That is correct. And that is after the alleged harassment occurred.
Okay. And so the theory would be that, what is the theory as to why cross-examining on that issue would help show her bias or motive?
Because if she did take those cards and use them, and then a theft case was initiated against her, there was a motive for her to give false testimony, for her to make the whole story up again, motive to lie on the stand to seek a conviction. Because if there's a theft charge outstanding against her, she would want him to have a conviction. Because that conviction could be used in that theft trial later on, or impeach him as to his credibility. The motive is retaliation and revenge. And taking those credit cards and then using them and then having an outstanding investigation, she wanted revenge against him. She wanted him to have a conviction. And that's what we sought to be able to cross-examine, to question her on.
So what are we to make of the statements in the record where the public defender says at several points it's prior and subsequent,
I think she was saying it was prior to trial or subsequent to the alleged harassment.
Well, she cites 404B, which I'm not sure would mean prior to trial.
404B does not say that it has to be a prior bad act, just as other acts.
So the prosecution's position is that this cross-examination would be of little probative value, because if the theft took place after the harassment incident, then that wouldn't go to a motive for fabricating the charge of harassment. Now, how do you respond to that?
It goes to a motive. The most essential, the crucial thing is the motivation to lie on the stand. She, at the time of the alleged harassment, she had a motive to fabricate the harassment. That was to get him arrested, get him out of the apartment. However, she also, as time went on, she had a motive to seek a conviction against him, a motive to retaliate. There are two separate motivations in this case. And we were able to, a little bit, to cross-examine question with respect to motive to get him arrested. However, that's an entirely separate motive from seeking an actual conviction. And actually, Davis v. Alaska, it's a case, U.S. Supreme Court cited by respondent, does say in note 5, a partiality of mind at some former time may be used as the basis of an argument to the same state at the time of testifying, though the ultimate object is to establish partiality at the time of testifying. At the time of testifying, she sought revenge. She had a motive to seek revenge against him. And that's what we were prohibited from questioning on. And that's what we needed to question on. We needed to show that she, you know, had a motivation to lie in the sand to seek a conviction in retaliation against Mr. Lavelle.
Did you argue, you argued at trial, didn't you, that one of the reasons to for this information to come in was to explain why she wanted to get him out of the apartment so she could steal the credit cards and other things? Did you argue that below as the motivation?
We did. Our argument below was that it was highly relevant as it goes to motive. The motive of lying, making this whole story up.
Okay, so the whole story is made up, not just her testimony on the stand, but even the initial charge was fabricated so that she could, and that was explained to the judge, that was why you wanted to get question the witness regarding subsequent events because that's why she wanted him out of the apartment so she could commit the snatch.
No, it wasn't explained exactly what the motive was. During cross-examination, it wasn't listed that we wanted her out of the apartment. However, the motion in limine and on page 50, we were talking about the motive of lying. Motive of lying includes both the original motive of having him arrested and the motive of lying on the stand. Motive of lying on the stand is what's really important in this case. And that's what we were prohibited from questioning. And it's not, we were prohibited from questioning on the motivation of lying and making the story up and lying under oath, giving testimony before a judge. We really should be able to cross-examine the witness about any motivation to lie.
Well, just so we're clear, are you now, would it or would it not have been an appropriate form of cross-examination to pursue the theory that she made this accusation of harassment up to get him out of the apartment so she would have the opportunity to steal the cards? Is that not a theory that you, that's what the theory appeared to be, or at least in the trial court? Are you now suggesting that is not an appropriate theory, or is it an appropriate theory in your view that
No. You
should have been able, or the defendant should have been able to pursue?
No, that is exactly the theory that we should have been able to pursue, that she had a motive to lie, get him arrested, motive to use the credit cards, and the motivation also to, you know, lie on the stand to get a conviction against them in retaliation for the alleged theft that occurred. So the motivation, just because of the fact we were able to cross-examine on the motivation to get him arrested does not mean that we were able to cross-examine on the motivation to get a conviction. There are two separate motivations in this case. And the motivation to seek for the conviction is one that we really needed to cross-examine her on.
Well, the fact is we don't know whether or not motivation would have been proven, do we?
No, we don't know if it would have been proven, but we would...
So what you're basically arguing is that you should have had the opportunity to explore that with this witness?
That's all we were arguing. And we even said she could deny it on the stand, but we have the right to cross-examine her on that. Also in this regard, the Sixth Amendment is satisfied where sufficient information is elicited to allow the jury to gauge adequately a witness's credibility and to assess his or her motives or possible bias. That's from Balazs Pisana. In this case, we were not allowed, or the judge was not given sufficient information to allow to judge the witness's motives in this case. Maybe we were possibly allowed to assess the witness's motive to seek arrest, but not a motive to get a conviction in this case. There are two separate motives, and the continuing theory that she sought an arrest, wanted to use his credit cards, and then got mad at him when he brought a theft charge against her, those all things that we should have been able to cross-examine on.
And you brought that up to the trial judge, that one of the reasons that you wanted to bring in the subsequent theft was to gauge her bias, credibility, prejudice as a witness.
Yes, we said it went to motive and to her theory of lying, motive of lying and making this whole story up.
No, but you're saying now that it's a... not just to make it up on the initial charge, but about her affecting her testimony as a witness. Did you bring that to the trial court's attention?
We did. We said highly relevant as it goes to her motive and credibility. The motive of lying, making this whole story up, that's a continuing. So she lied at the time, and her motivations changed. She's still lying now, and her motivations changed for lying. So making this whole story up.
I understand what you're saying. I'm just asking you, did you bring it to the court's attention? Did you say that not only does it go to her motive of bringing the charges, but also we're allowed to bring this to the court's attention because she's a witness now?
Because she's a witness now.
And isn't that what you're saying? Because you want to judge her credibility on the stand.
Yes.
And that's what you're saying. Did you bring that to the court's attention?
Not in those specific words, but I think what we did was sufficient to show that we were challenging her credibility. Her credibility to lie and make this whole story up. And that goes both to the time of the initial incident and the time that she took the stand. The judge knew she was going to take the stand. The judge knew that this was a case where credibility was at issue. And the judge also ruled that she found the complaining witness more credible than Mr. Lavelle, which shows which further supports the fact that we should have been allowed to cross-examine her as to her credibility, as to her motive to lie. Because if that evidence did come out, the judge could have found differently. So, additionally, finally, the court did abuse its discretion.
Well, let me ask you. So the defense attorney did raise the issue of cross-examining with respect to whether the credit cards were stolen and whether they were used. Is that correct? But the court said, well, you know, I think it's prejudicial because the charge is presently under investigation. And I think the prosecution said you should instruct her as to self-incrimination. And apparently the court took that as the prejudice. So how does that work here? Is that prejudice?
No, that's not prejudice. Whether a witness exerts or does not exert her right against self-incrimination should not be considered prejudicial in a case. The prosecution did, on the second time this issue was raised, did say, well, please just instruct her on her right against self-incrimination. Whether a witness exerts that right is not prejudice. Prejudice in the case is where something so inflammatory goes before a judge or a jury that skews their mind and decision making. In this case, whether she asserts her Fifth Amendment right, that is not prejudicial.
Well, do we know whether she would have exerted her Fifth Amendment right or not?
We don't know. We were prohibited from even asking the question. The questions. We did sufficiently raise that. Finally, the error is not harmless beyond reasonable doubt. Pallez-Pisano gives the reasons to be considered in determining whether the error is harmless. We must consider the importance of a witness's testimony in the prosecution's case. Here, Ms. Avila was the only the sole witness for the prosecution. There was no police officer. There was no other person who witnessed the event. It was solely Ms. Avila. So her testimony was crucial. The testimony was also, whether the testimony was cumulative, there was no cumulative testimony in this regard. In order for evidence to be considered cumulative, it must be substantially the same as other evidence that has already been received. Here, that's not the case. We were not able to question her about her motivation to lie on the stand to seek a conviction. We weren't able to question her about that motivation, and that's crucial to this case, which entirely hinged on the credibility of the complaining witness versus that of Mr. Lavelle. You're also supposed to consider the presence or absence of evidence corroborating or contradicting testimony. In this case, there was no evidence that corroborated her testimony. There was no pictures of any injury. There was no police report. There was no police officer that testified. And the ICA seemed to rely on the fact that Mr. Lavelle stated that I'm probably the guy that you're looking for because I was trying to find out, you know, what the problem was, what's going on, what they were called for. However, that is not an admission of guilt, and that cannot make the error harmless beyond reasonable doubt. On page 45 of the transcript, Ms. Avila testified that she told Mr. Lavelle that before she left, she was going to go downstairs and call the police. So he knew when he went down that she had already called the police. So his statement, I'm probably the guy that you're looking for because he was, you know, wanted to know what was going on, is not an admission of guilt and is not even substantial evidence that of harassment. And this is very similar to Pallez-Pisano, where the case hinged on, or this is very similar to Corella, a 1995 decision where the case hinged on whether or not the jury believed the complainant's testimony. In this case, the case hinged on whether or not the judge believed Ms. Avila's testimony. Because it was, there was no other evidence, it was just her word against his, this error cannot be deemed to be harmless beyond reasonable doubt. I do think there does seem to be some confusion with respect to what the possible motivation is. There, There are, like I said before, different motivations. The motivation to get him arrested, a motivation to seek a conviction. Like Marcos, the witness had a motivation to seek a conviction. In this case, Ms. Avila had a motivation to seek a conviction, and we weren't allowed to cross-examine her on that. We should have been. Bowman under 609.11c says the issues with the proffered material has relevance, that is, any tendency to support an inference of the witness's disposition or tendency consciously or unconsciously to slant testimony one way or the other from the straight and true. Here it's entirely clear that this line of questioning had relevance to whether she had a motive to seek a conviction, motive to seek revenge, motive to lie on the stand. And we should have been able to question her on it. It was relevant. The court was wrong in determining that it was not relevant. And the court, violated his right to confront the witnesses because there was no evidence which the judge had to sufficiently gauge her credibility on the stand. The ICA cited Mars. We're going to the harmless beyond the reasonable doubt side. The ICA cited Mars, a 2007 decision. In that case, there was the ICA applied the harmless beyond reasonable doubt standard very well. They looked at they said that the evidence was cumulative because in that case there was substantial latitude was given to cross-examining the complaining witness about other incidents that the complaining witness lied previously. There was substantial other evidence to support the conviction, which included other independent witnesses' testimony. And there was other witnesses. In that case, State v. Mars applied the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt standard. In this case, the ICA didn't even apply that standard. It didn't apply the Valesca-Sano factors. And that is grievous and is inconsistent with State v. Mars' decision that it cites.
Is there anything else in the prosecution's briefs that you disagree with?
I disagree with the fact that we argue that it's not relevant, as I stated before. I disagree with the fact that just because we were given latitude in cross-examining her about bias initially, that's not that we were still denied our right to cross-examine her on the motive to lie and to take this lie under oath and seek a conviction. They make a big incident about the fact that the incident occurred after and not before. However, that's really not relevant when the alleged motive arose. State v. Marcos makes that clear. There's other cases. There's nothing in 609.1, nothing in the white rules of evidence that says that the motive must arise before the alleged harassment or before the incident. There's no case law that supports that position. They also said it's State v. Buffalo for the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt standard. In that case, the appellate court 1983 decision said that if there's a plethora of overwhelming and compelling evidence tending to show the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, errors in the admission or exclusion of evidence will be deemed harmless. If there is a plethora of overwhelming and compelling evidence, in this case, that standard is not met. I basically disagree with everything that they say in their answering brief, that it was not relevant. It was relevant. It was an abuse of discretion to preclude it. There was a motive to fabricate the allegations. There was a motive to lie on the stand. We needed to be able to cross-examine on that point. And it wasn't the previous, just because we were allowed to cross-examine about a previous incident, a motive to seek an arrest does not mean we were able to question a motive to seek a conviction.
Anything further at this time, Ms. Stanley?
No, unless you have further questions.
Any further questions at this time? You still have a rebuttal, so we'll be able to hear from you later if you do have any further points.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Tsushima.
Good morning, Chief Justice. Good
morning, Mr. Tsushima.
Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Stephen Tsushima on behalf of the State of Hawaii. Now, the most important point I'm going to make before this court this morning is simply a clarification of the record. And the point of clarification is this. The excluded evidence of which we are speaking about is simply questioning by defense counsel. Defense counsel maintained she had a right to ask this question, whether or not the complaining witness, CW, took defendant's debit cards and used them after he was arrested. Just to be clear, the record does not indicate defense had any evidence that this theft indeed occurred. They didn't have any evidence to show that it was the CW that took defendant's debit cards and used that after his arrest. In fact, this court need look no further than 6 pages. The offer proof on pages 3 and 4, the court's ruling on page 5, and once again, when the defense counsel asked for reconsideration, that's on page 49 and 50, and the court's ruling on 50 and 51. And at no time did the defense ever say they had any evidence to show that this theft, in fact, and indeed occurred. If there's no other evidence.
Well, what kind of other evidence did you need besides assuming they were going to put the defendant on the stand to say that she took it?
Isn't
that enough?
At least that. But defense counsel never even offered that. Never said, we're going to call the defendant, and the defendant will claim his debit card was missing on such and such date, such and such funds was missing, and she's the only one that was living in the apartment. The only one that would have access, but there's none of that. We don't even have.
Implied? You don't think that's implied in the question? Isn't it true that you took, after he was arrested, you went into his room and took his credit and debit cards and used them?
No, absolutely not. Because defendant, by the very question, was under arrest. So how would he have personal knowledge that she was the one that took the debit card, used it without his authorization? It would all be speculation. It'd be just a guessing game on his part if he took the stand. The most he could say is that those funds were used and his debit card was used while he was arrested, but for him to say that it was her is speculation. It'd have to be just circumstantial. But even that wasn't offered by defense counsel. Defense counsel is not going to say that's what my client will testify to. We don't know from this record.
Is defense counsel required to say that his client was going to
Oh, no,
doesn't he have a right not to testify and confront the witness?
Absolutely. I guess the point I'm trying to make is for the offer of proof of what makes the question relevant so that there's a factual good faith basis, that's what the defense counsel had to offer. Not to say what that defendant will indeed take the stand, and will, but for the questioning to become even relevant, for a good faith basis to ask this question, to accuse the CW of theft, there has to be some offer of proof. There's none. There's no mention of a bank statement.
But did anyone challenge the good faith basis for asking the question, or did they all move directly to the question of whether this was an appropriate topic, assuming there was a good faith basis? Did the prosecuting attorney say, Your Honor, I asked for a proffer as to the basis for that question?
I think the prosecutor did, to the extent that the prosecutor was saying, this is just an allegation, not specifically using the words, there's not a good faith basis for asking the question, but I think the prosecutor was trying to make his record that what we have here is just an allegation so far. There's, in fact, all I know is up to about 5 minutes before court started, a defendant appeared to be talking to a police officer about it.
Mr. Tsushima, isn't it true that the defense counsel asked, I guess it was the defendant, whether or not he was trying to get rid of her?
Yes, that is.
And so the question was, you were going to kick her out of the apartment. Answer, yeah, it was time for her to leave anyway. And this is solely because over the cell phone thing? Answer, no. I had already noticed that she had been stealing from me. Your Honor, and the prosecution objects, and the court sustains. And even before this or after this, didn't the defense attorney try to ask the question of whether anyone else lived in that apartment or had access to that apartment?
Yes.
So, and those were objections were made, and those were sustained, right?
Yes.
So then the defense tried to get that information in, but could not because of the court's, I guess, ruling or prior ruling.
Through the CW?
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, so it's clear that the court, I mean, that the defense tried to get this information in, the basis for him saying that she stole his credit card. But that kind of information just couldn't come in. I mean, the defense couldn't even lay the foundation to show that no one had access to the apartment except the defendant and the complainant. And so therefore, the inference would be that the complainant was the one who took things from him or his credit cards.
Correct.
In fact, he testified, and I don't know if he was able to give an answer, that she took other things other than his credit cards.
I believe he did testify, and it was objected to and it was stricken. If I'm correct, correct me if I'm wrong. Correct. I believe that is what occurred.
Mr. Tsushima, apparently at the pretrial motion limine, the prosecutor stated on the record that the allegation was still being investigated up till 5 minutes ago. So I'm just wondering, when did that? Was there any evidence as to when the investigation had actually started?
No, there's no evidence of that.
Had a complaint been made? As far as you know?
As far as the record shows, no. There's nothing represented that there's ever a complaint made, a police report filed, anything of that nature.
Okay.
The only thing that alludes to anything was what you just said, was from the prosecutor saying, the prosecutor just saying that this is just an allegation thus far. And from what I know, I observed.
What did the prosecutor mean by still being investigated?
I don't know, because it's not clear. It just seems like the prosecutor was just stating what he may have observed outside the courtroom. I really don't want to speculate to what the prosecutor knows, because the record doesn't show anything other than it seemed to be an allegation right now. Presumably, I think what a reasonable inference is defendants alleging it. But what basis it's coming from, that's not in the record. Not at all. Not one bit.
Mr. Tsushima, I guess we're all bound by the statement out of Estrada. Bias, interest, or motive is always relevant. So under HRE Rule 609.1. So you don't take the position that evidence of bias or interest or motive is not relevant in this case, do you?
Correct. I do not think that.
So what's the issue? If on one hand, we don't know what the basis is for prejudice, since the court never held a hearing on the self-incrimination issue, and we don't know if the self-incrimination privilege would have been invoked by the complainant. So if we're balancing, as Balasubana seems to say, on one hand, we really haven't shown any prejudice. On the other hand, we know bias, interest, and motive is relevant. And a lie is a lie, isn't it? So if she's lying, isn't that relevant to the case? And shouldn't cross-examination have been allowed?
Absolutely. But for us to even get there, for what the defense counsel suggested she wanted to cross-examine, you have to have a good faith basis for the question. You can't just, what she kept on submitting is, I have a right to ask this question. Well, not really. You don't have a right to ask any question. You have a right to ask a question that you have good faith, factual basis for asking. She didn't provide that. She never laid it out for the court that she had a good faith basis for making this allegation, for claiming
the fact that the police had been notified and that they were investigating this charge. Doesn't that give some support to the fact that there may be some credibility to this charge?
Well, just to be clear, on this record, we don't even know what defendant was talking to the police about, because the prosecutor was the only one that raised it.
The court says there's an investigation. That's why I'm not going to allow this testimony.
Just based off what the deputy prosecuting attorney had represented, that there appears to be an investigation.
So who are to believe then? Who do we believe?
We just don't know what's clear on the record of what was
going
on.
If we don't know who to believe, at least we know what the court said. The court said there's an investigation, so I'm not going to allow it.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. That's true.
So is that a showing of prejudice? Is that a showing that allowing this testimony would be prejudicial?
That just shows what, it just doesn't show that it even has relevance yet, because we don't know what the basis of the investigation is. Sure, it's being investigated, but the investigation may be, you know, defendant just saying, I'm missing some money. I think it was her. Well, what basis do you have? Well, I'm missing money.
I don't think he said it was her. I think it was her, right? Because he reported her to the police.
We actually don't know what he said, because there's nothing about what he said in the record. There's just absolutely nothing that shows this theft, in fact, occurred. We don't even know what the allegation is. We don't know the basis of the allegation. We don't even know when he's alleging that it occurred.
If this cross-examination were allowed, or there was a hearing outside of the trial, then we would know, right?
Well, it was a bench trial, so whatever
evidence I mean, she could separate out pre-hearing.
Right,
and in fact, she had some pre-hearing, right? It's not on the record, but she had already told the attorney she wasn't going to allow this testimony.
Correct.
So if we had a hearing, then we would know, right?
Correct. And
we didn't have a hearing, though.
Well, when the defense attorney is making her offer proof, that is the hearing. You just say what you have. You say what evidence you have right then and there. That way the bench judge has the basis to make
I meant a hearing where the court determines whether or not there's prejudice because self-incrimination would be invoked.
Or just
that the witness would invoke self-incrimination. Because we don't know unless there's a hearing on that.
Sorry, Mr. Sir. Specifically as to that, no, there wasn't a hearing as to that. No. So, sort of lost my train of thought there. But, so going back to what I was saying, that there was no other evidence of questioning, so there is no police report, no bank statement, not even a single witness mentioned by defense counsel, and certainly not what the witness would testify to, and not even defendant's testimony with regard to the allegation and what he was alleging. So when we're talking about what's the excluded evidence in this case, it was questioning, and that's it. It was a shot in the dark by defense counsel. And that's why it wasn't an abuse of discretion for trial judge to say, no, I don't find that's relevant. There's an investigation going on, that's fine. But you can't ask that question. You have no basis right now. You haven't given
but that's not the basis that the trial court relied on in denying the cross-examination. You know, if the trial court had fronted, well, counsel, you know, I'm really not sure whether there's enough evidence here to allow you to answer the question, presumably the attorney could have fronted the testimony of her client or the expected testimony of her client or whatever other information she had. But that's not what the judge did. The judge instead said, I don't think it's relevant, and I think there's a concern about Fifth Amendment rights. Right. So how was the defense attorney even alerted that this issue was in play, the issue you now raise was in play?
I guess it's always in play. If there's evidence you want to present before the court and the court's excluding, you feel this is evidence that you should be able to put on, you need to put it on the record so that this court isn't left in the dark at a guessing game. Defense counsel didn't say she had any evidence. Presumably there was no evidence. That was the time to lay it out. And that's why I'm saying all we have before us is questioning, because that's all she had. And you know, defense has never suggested otherwise, not in their opening brief, not in their petition, and not even today before this court are they suggesting that they had other evidence. You know, that's good of them, because that's what the record shows. There was no other evidence. It was just questioning. And if you don't have a good faith basis, the court was totally within its right under HRE Rule 611 to exercise its control of the trial, to not to protect the witness from undue embarrassment of being accused of a theft that there's no basis or no evidence of it ever occurring. So that's what makes it not relevant. And that's why I believe the court stated what it did, that it said it's not relevant to this, it's just an allegation. Without more, no, I'm not going to allow that question.
Would you say the court would have had a basis for allowing the question if the defendant would testify there were thefts in this time frame and it was only the two of us living in the apartment? Would that be enough to allow the questioning?
I think it'd still be difficult because it's still just an allegation that doesn't put it on her. It doesn't show that the theft indeed, in fact, occurred. It really would just be a shine in the dark, a guessing game by defendant that it was her.
If two of them were living in the apartment and things were missing during this period of time, that wouldn't support a good faith basis for asking the question.
Well, specifically for the bank card?
For the thefts. Alleged thefts, and let me make clear, alleged thefts.
I still think you would need a little bit more to show that it in fact occurred, because it have to be something that you're going to impeach the CW with should she deny the allegation. What defense seemed to indicate is it believed that that is all of that was going to happen, because defense counsel says, I'm entitled to ask this question. She can deny it. That's fine. That's it. Not that's it. And then I'm going to impeach her with defendant who's going to be able to say blah, 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 blah. No. We don't even know what defendant possibly was going to testify to, because she never told us. So we don't even know if defendant was going to be able to say, I know it was missing while I was under arrest. We don't know that because it's not in the record.
I'm so sorry to keep pressing this issue, but when the prosecutor said it's still being investigated, yeah. When did the investigation start?
I'm sorry, and that's perfectly fine asking that question. I can't tell you because it's not in the record. It could have started that day, that morning. We just don't know. They don't say when the investigation starts because there's no reference to like a HPD report being filed. Not even that
there
day.
There is no HPD report, right?
There is none. There's none mentioned by them. There's no bank statement offered. I know I mentioned that before, but there's just nothing. There's not even, as Chief Justice Recknell pointed out, if defendant makes these allegations, maybe there's something there, but we don't even know what the allegation would have been. We don't know that defendant had any knowledge that there's a certain time frame when his debit card would have been missing.
So are you saying that we should affirm the district court because of the public defender's failure to make an offer of proof on the record?
Because that does show that is one basis upon which it shows that it wasn't even relevant to ask this question. Absolutely.
But you have conceded that our case law says that evidence of bias, interest, or motive is always relevant, correct?
Yes.
So isn't the issue really as to whether or not 403 applies, not 401? This is relevant.
Correct. It would have been relevant if there was some offer of proof that it indeed occurred.
But that's not what the state argued before the trial court. The state was not requesting any offer of proof, or the state did not contest a good faith basis.
They did not contest a good faith basis or ask for specifically an offer of proof, but they did say this is just an allegation. So I think the prosecutor was properly pointing out that there's not a fact that this occurred, that there isn't anything factual upon.
Sorry, are you finished with your answer?
Lisa,
thank you.
So when the defense attorney says, and Your Honor, I will be moving under Rule 404B for a prior bad act, I would also like to cross-examine on a subsequent bad act. It does not need to be a conviction. This is highly relevant to my case. Specifically in this case, if I were to allow the question, I would ask the complaining witness whether or not she took my client's debit cards and used them after he was arrested, et cetera. And so you don't think that's an offer of proof?
I believe that was her offer of proof. I would agree with that. Then when she goes on, repeatedly what she says is, I would like to cross-examine the complaining witness on this. If I were allowed to ask this question, this is my right to cross-examine. It is relevant to cross-examine. If she's going tonight, then fine. Not then I'll put on my evidence to impeach her. Then I have evidence of this. It's then fine. That's it. We're done. That's all I want to do. I want to ask this question.
I don't want to repeat, but didn't the defense attorney try to get that information into evidence, but that evidence was excluded? The defendant said, I was going to kick her out because she was stealing things from me. No one else had access to the apartment except she and me.
Could be wrong, but I think defense counsel was still able to ask the question through defendant that he was going downstairs to kick her out. It was about time. I believe that still is in evidence. The question I think...
He was never allowed to answer, right?
He was not allowed to answer?
Yeah, he was not allowed to answer.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he did answer that, and that was in evidence. I believe what you might be alluding to is on page 50, where she again was asking the court to reconsider and wanted to ask who else resided in the apartment. Was it just her who had access to the belongings? And if she did, in fact, use his credit cards as well as take other things from his apartment.
He wasn't allowed to give answers to those, right?
No.
Okay. Now, you know, with all due respect, you make, you say that it's significant, and I think the ICA said it was significant that the defendant made the statement about, I went down,
I believe I'm the gentleman you're looking for.
Right. I went down to the to say, So he testifies, I'm probably the gentleman that you're looking for. And the trial court and the ICA and you stop there. But that's not the full sentence, right? Because he goes, the full sentence is, I'm probably the gentleman that you're looking for because I was trying to find out what the problem is, what's going on, what they were called for, and settle this situation. Mm-hmm. So he had an explanation for why he appeared.
Correct.
And he knew that she had called the police. She told him she was going to call the police.
Correct.
And she left the apartment. And so she left the apartment. And so he went down after she went down. Mm-hmm. Okay.
The other thing that the last point I want to make is that the defense still was able to present its theory that the CW fabricated the harassment so that defendant would be arrested so that she could remain there without him present. She admitted she was angry, living there rent-free, and did not want to give back the cell phone. So what this court had before it was still sufficient information from which it could weigh biased interest motive. Admittedly, it is not the same as the defense theory of CW fabricated it because she wanted to arrest it so that she could remain there to steal his debit cards. I admit that that is different. However, what was represented before the court was that they wanted to bring in this evidence to show her biased interest motives in making up the harassment itself. This was never represented by defense counsel that it was going to be offered for what they have said on appeal and what they've said this morning to this court, that they also wanted to additionally offer it to show when she takes a stand that she has a biased interest motive to testify falsely. That was not before the district court, so the district court did not know that defense wanted to offer it for that purpose. Defense counsel at trial was not offering it for that purpose. On appeal, now they are saying that's also another way it could have been offered, but that's not what the trial judge had before, so that's not what it was being offered for at trial. In sum, what the court had in front of it was sufficient information in which to weigh biased interest motive, and the proof's cross-examination would not have changed the verdict before this trial judge. Unless this court has any other questions, I'm done.
Any further questions? No. Thank you very much, then, Mr. Tsushima. Ms. Stanley, your rebuttal. How much time does Ms. Stanley ever mean?
I just want to address that a couple of points. First, respondent seems to suggest that we needed to have other evidence before we were able to cross-examine the complaining witness. We don't need to have the police reports. We don't need to have his debit statements. We don't need any of that. Questioning, the only issue is that we should have been able to question her. We had a big good faith basis for making these questions, and
what was the good faith basis?
The good faith basis was that the complaining witness, took the credit cards and used them after he was arrested.
Based on what? What in the record reflects that?
Our basis was. That was what the record reflected. The record also reflected that all parties knew that there was a pending investigation that was pending at the time of trial. The judge knew that. The prosecutor stated that on the record.
Was there an HPD complaint?
It's not in the record.
Was there an HPD complaint?
I do not know. We don't need to have other evidence. We don't need those reports.
What evidence did you have? I guess that's my question. In other words, you cannot just come in and ask somebody a question, hey, did you steal something, you know, with no basis whatsoever, just to embarrass or harass them. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. So there must have been a basis in the defense counsel's mind. What does the record show that basis was or would have been?
It would have been Mr. Lavelle's testimony that there was that she indeed did steal from him. However, we were also precluded from even asking those questions to the defendant, or even asking Mr. Lavelle about the thefts or any incident that occurred between him and Ms. Avila. If we were allowed to question him about that, the record would be more developed for this court to see that there was actually indeed like allegations of theft that were going on at this time. However, because we were completely precluded by the district court from doing that, there was a good faith basis. And the basis would have come out at trial if we were able to question. However, in this case, we weren't able to question either Ms. Avila or the defendant, Mr. Lavelle, about the alleged thefts. And that's what's very prejudicial in this case to our client. The prosecutor seems to suggest that we were also supposed to proffer what the defendant would say. The basis what we have right now is sufficient. If I were to allow the question, I would ask the complaining witness whether or not she took my client's debit cards and used them after he was arrested. That is entirely sufficient to show that, and this is highly relevant to my case, to present my defense as it goes to motive. No one disputes the fact that evidence of motive is always relevant. In this case, it was relevant. And that was sufficient in this case to inform all parties that this was an allegation that was going to her motive to lie, a motivation to make this entire story a motive to lie on the stand. And that was sufficient.
Well, bonus bonus is that the court cannot sufficiently appraise the credibility of the witnesses if it excludes all evidence of this alleged bias. Isn't that correct? Bonus bonus, the court has the discretion to curb the scope of cross-examination, but only after there's this threshold allowance for the defense to establish the basis for the bias.
That's correct. Either sufficient information is elicited to allow the judge or the jury to adequately gauge a witness's biases or motives. And in this case, that constitutional threshold standard was not satisfied. And yes, in Balas Bisana, there was a prohibition into all inquiry into the bias and motives. In this case, there was a prohibition.
Did the prosecution ever question good faith?
No, they did not question it at all. All parties at the
time. In fact, their position was there's an investigation going on and she may incriminate herself, so the court should instruct her on that privilege.
That's correct. It actually did not seem like the prosecutor was very adamant in precluding this line of questioning, as the prosecutor just said, well, if the questions are allowed, just advise her of her rights. At the trial level.
So at trial and before the ICA, the prosecution never challenged the good faith basis for the representation to the court, I guess backed up by the attorney's oath, that the that there was a good faith basis for this allegation?
No, they did not. It seemed as at the trial court level, all parties knew what the basis was. And at the appellate level, all parties knew what the basis was. I see my time is up. I would just like to thank this court for having the opportunity to argue to me. It's a privilege and an honor. And we do ask that this court vacate the conviction and remand the case for a new trial. The error in this case was not harmed beyond reasonable doubt. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shishima and Ms. Stanley. Thank you for your arguments today. The court will take this matter under advisement.